This morning, we are at the seventh picture in the Oxherding Pictures, stage seven of the spiritual journey. The ox is forgotten. In previous stages, we searched for, caught a glimpse of, captured, tamed, and rode astride the ox. And now the ox has carried us home. But the ox itself is gone as a separate subject of our journey. We're alone and we're at home and we're pretty content. Actually, we're in blissful repose. Let's take a look at the picture again. Jerry, could you put it on the screen? So there it is. Looks like maybe a moon or a sun, and there's the ox herder, the bhikkhu, the yogi, the practitioner. It's pretty serene setting. I'll read the verse. The ox forgotten, the self remains. Astride the bull, I reach home. I am serene. The bull too can rest. The dawn has come in blissful repose within my thatched dwelling. I have abandoned the whip and ropes. Thank you, Jerry. You can remove the picture. So I'm going to share some reflections on this picture. I'm not an expert on this stage of the spiritual journey, although I have discussed the picture with my fellow LDLs and I've read some commentaries, and I'm very happy to know that this stage exists on the spiritual journey. I think these pictures can help inform our practice in several ways, even if we don't see a lot of our own direct experience in the picture. First, it's reassuring to know where we're headed. And it's also reassuring to know that abandoning the whip and rope is possible and actually advisable. And that returning home and being in a state of serenity and blissful repose are fruits of our practice. When I look at this picture, it helps me pay attention with gratitude to moments when I have experiences that resemble aspects of this picture and verse. Or it's helpful when I find myself stuck in my preferred practice for taming the ox, my monkey mind. I can question, as Tim asked us to do a few Monday nights ago, I can ask, is the technique I'm practicing serving my intention? Does it ever get in the way of where I'm heading? Am I clinging to it? So the picture helps me see where I am on my journey and helps me see where I'm going and maybe things I might want to change, or just keeps giving me faith that I'm going in the right direction. Reflecting on the pictures also helps open us to think in intuitive ways and interpret our experience in an intuitive way, which can add to our understanding. We keep seeing these pictures and hearing the verse over the course of the month, and I know for myself that I keep seeing things anew. I can keep reframing, and that helps me do the same thing with my own experience. You know, look at it. What else? What's the mystery here? The seventh picture and verse, in my view, focus on the sense we get when we feel at home, safe and at ease, when we know where our refuge is. When we're there, there's nowhere else to go, nothing else to do. It's the place we come back to. We are returning to what we knew all along. And that makes me think of the true self. In the Zen tradition, our true self is perfect and always present, but not always realized. It seems that if the practitioner has not realized the true self at the stage of picture 7, he or she is close to realizing it. We've turned a corner. It's clear this is where we're going. He or she has left behind the subject-object duality in relationship to the mind. The abbot of the Zen Mountain Monastery in New York, where these pictures were painted, says, "Studying the self is the most difficult undertaking any of us will ever engage in." And yet, investigating anatta, not self, is essential to awakening. The conditioned self has to be deconstructed. Ultimately, we have to see the house builder, as the Buddha did the night he was enlightened. In this picture, we see the practitioner, or the bhikkhu, the yogi, in the house alone. He is in the right place to continue looking inward to realize the true self. Whips and ropes are not needed for this. The mind we named as separate from us is not needed. What extra is needed? Not much. This is a humble, very ordinary, unembellished thatch dwelling. It implies that in the context of our ordinary life, without special rituals, techniques, protocols, rites, fanfare, enlightenment is possible. The light from the natural world is the only adornment at this point. In various versions of the verse, it is the bright sun, or the bright moon, or the dawn, or the red sun riding high in the sky. In each of these versions, the conditions are luminous. And I think maybe it's our job to see the luminous potential in the ordinary moment. I recently read in one of Thich Nhat Hanh's journals from the Fragrant Palm Leaves, published, it was about his time in 1962, there it was a description of his direct experience of the true self. I've read that part over several times, and I find it moving, and I want to share it with you this morning, because I think it expresses the stage of our journey in picture 7. The setting for Thich Nhat Hanh's experience was very ordinary. Thich Nhat Hanh was teaching at Columbia University in New York City, and he had gone to the library to find a book that his professor had recommended to him for his research. He found the book and was looking at the names of the two other people who had checked it out years before. He writes in his journal, "I stood quietly for a few moments, holding the book in my hands. That night, standing among the stacks of Butler Library, I saw that I am neither young nor old, existent nor non-existent." He continues, "I saw the entity I had taken to be me was really a fabrication. My true nature, I realized, was more real, both uglier and more beautiful than I could have imagined." That kind of chokes me up every time I read it. "A veil lifted silently and effortlessly. That's all. If you beat me, stone me, or even shoot me, everything that is considered to be me will disintegrate. Then what is actually there will reveal itself. Faint as smoke, elusive as emptiness, and yet neither smoke nor emptiness. Neither ugly nor not ugly. Beautiful, yet not beautiful. It's like a shadow on a screen. At that moment, I had the deep feeling that I had returned. I was as carefree as a grasshopper pausing on a blade of grass. Thich Nhat Hanh continues with a description of this time in his life, which apparently lasted for weeks, a time in which he says he was unable to converse and could only manage manual chores. He likened it to a storm. When the storm finally passed, he said, layers of inner mortar lay crumbled. On the now deserted battlefield, a few sunbeams peeked through the horizon. And he goes on with his description of the time. And then he says, one morning, I felt the sky brighten a little. I received a birthday card from home. That was the day I felt myself reborn. I had looked the beast straight in the eye and seen it for what it is. I got dressed, walked outside, and strolled along Broadway, thirsty for the morning sun after so many days of darkness. I think Thich Nhat Hanh's experience illustrates several elements of the part of our part of our spiritual journey. We turn inward to examine the layers of the not true self, that our ego, and our mini self images that we believe keep us safe and in control. This discovery process itself is not in our control and actually gets set in motion by our letting go of control. Our founding teacher, Rodney Smith, spoke Friday night about the spiritual journey. And what he talked about was quite in line with what we've been finding out in our exploration of the Oxherding pictures. Rodney asked, where is our spiritual journey taking us? And he said we should reflect on this. His answer was that it's taking us to the non-reducible essence of life, which includes the essential self, our true self. He said the self-image is what covers over the essence we're trying to find. And you can't get there through will and determination. For Thich Nhat Hanh, a veil silently and effortlessly lifted. There's a time for cultivating technique and taming, and that has gotten us to a place of readiness. A place Rodney calls stillness. And now we're at a place where we can leave ourselves alone. Ego is built upon conditioning and separates us from our true self. So we basically feel insecure, disconnected, wobbly. We need support and affirmation from outside ourselves. When we face and shed our ego defenses, we have a much stronger ground upon which to repose, because like Thich Nhat Hanh, we know we have returned to our origin and we can be reborn. We are connected with our essential, unchanging nature that is also the unchanging essence of life. The other element that Thich Nhat Hanh's experience expresses is the importance of the intersection of the worldly world, also called the relative world, and the ultimate world. Looking at picture 7 and reading the verse, it's easy to imagine the ox herder staying put in his dwelling. He's back home at rest. Maybe he'll become a hermit and continue his spiritual journey in serene seclusion. But wait, this is picture 7, not 10. It's not the end of the journey. We are of the world. We have bodies, hearts, and minds, and we will continue to grow our wisdom and compassion day to day, moment to moment, with what presents itself to us. And in so doing, integrate the two worlds. Not two, one. As Thich Nhat Hanh did when he got dressed, walked outside, and strode along Broadway. Although this picture is about surrendering effort and control, about serenity and repose, practice gets us here. What practice? Friday night, Rodney suggested we have to ask questions about our mentally derived sense of self. And the one that stood out for me was, am I willing to see this? That is on the billboard right beside my path right now. Am I willing to see this? To close, let's take a moment to get still and return home with a meditation from Thich Nhat Hanh. It's not unlike the meditation we had earlier. Breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. Breathing out, I know I'm breathing out. As the in-breath grows deep, the out-breath grows slow. Breathing in makes me calm. Breathing out brings me ease. With the in-breath, I smile. With the out-breath, I release. Breathing in, there is only the present moment. Breathing out, it is a wonderful moment. Coming home to the true self. Thank you for your attention this morning. And it was kind of a short talk, but it gives you time to, in the breakout rooms. And I was thinking that a prompt might be for you to describe your true self. And then I thought, whoa, that's kind of hard. So maybe describe your not true self. That was another thought I had. And then I thought you could also ask the question, what separates you from your true self? And what connects you? So I think this is a time on our journey that we really need to focus on our true self and what it is and what it isn't and where we're going with it. So if you need to leave now, that is fine. I hope you'll stay. And I'll put you in breakout rooms. Okay, let's see. Is everybody back? Yes, everyone's back. Okay, so we have, you know, a good 10 minutes. If people want to share anything that came up for them, their true self, their not true self, their process of connecting, or what keeps them from connecting. Charlotte.
Well, we agree with, we don't know what the true self is and what that means. So maybe somebody can explain it to us.
Well, I can start in that I know when I'm not true. And I know for me, there is kind of, I often call it my heart, you know, like my heart is open and resonates and things feel right and clear. And so it's things like that. And I mostly know it right now from my not true self. So that's why I threw that in, because my not true self is very insecure. And I can see myself being defensive. When I start seeing myself being defensive, I think, what am I defending? Well, I'm defending an image. And so in times of working with my not true self and my images, in our group, we talked about roles a lot, identification with roles, and then having those roles taken away, maybe not by choice, and then seeing, whoa, I thought that was my true self and I was identified with it. And now I don't have it anymore. What is it? What is my true self? And so then there's a search, and there's a place where we start feeling, you know, secure, you know, you feel grounded, like there's a grounding, like, you know, but it's not something you can necessarily define well. Because that's why it's essence, you know, we're at a level that's not necessarily linear. So I just encourage you to ask the question, you know, ask the question and notice when you really don't feel like this is an image that I'm trying to protect. This is something that's been created by my mind.
Thank you. Thank you, Laura. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Judith.
In the yoga tradition, there's this practice called neti neti, which means not this, not this. And so it's like you just start out, okay, this thing I identify with, no, not that. This title, no, not that. No, not that, not that, not that, not that. And when you get done with all of them, that's what's left. It's like peeling an onion. And you peel off each thing, and then what's left is you can't even see it. Anyway, that's how it was presented to me, and I always found that useful. You know, not an American, not a woman, not a, you know, a Democrat, not a this, not this, not a musician, not a poet, not this, not this, not this. What's left? Yeah.
Oh, I've never heard that, but I really like that. Yeah. So it is, it's like a shedding.
Like a shedding.
Yes.
All the identifications.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that as well, Judith, and also Charlotte. You know, that'd be a question I have. What was this truth self? And I guess in this practice, I don't tend to think along those lines, but I remember Rodney would do these dyads, and we'd face to face with one another, and yeah, you know, one person would ask, who am I? Well, who are you? They ask, who are you? And say, oh, I am a local Dharma leader, or I'm a guy from Milwaukee. I know all these identifications, and none of them would ring true. And it just seemed, well, what is this? What? And then you'd run out of things like that. And there's I think you're kind of left. Like what you were saying with Judith, you know, kind of the fallacy of identifying with this particular thing.
I was just thinking.
That's an answer, right? That's just my perspective. And that's, you're going to weigh in as there's your answer for you. That's a question, I think. I'm sorry, Lauren.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I was, what you were saying was just reminding me of Charlotte's question. Well, what is the true self? And when Thich Nhat Hanh was talking about it, no wonder we can't just come up with it quickly, because he says, you know, it's not existent, and it is, it's not not existent, and it's not existent, and it's not ugly, and it is ugly, and it's beautiful, and it's not beautiful. So you can see we're getting into an area where there's, it's not a an answer in words. But I think that that yoga technique is a really good one. It reminds me of Peer Gynt and peeling the onion, which is something that's often used. Not this. Yeah, not this, not this. That's nice. Anyone else want to share any of your explorations, Suze?
In our group, the word mystery came up, and not knowing, and in the place of being willing to sit in the place of not knowing, some knowing arises. You know, it's like the wisdom. When we, I think Rodney used the phrase on Friday night of like getting out of your way or something like that. And then when we get out of our way, there's some wisdom that's there. And I also wanted to add that this picture of being quiet in our own practice, our own hut, really is such a gift. And when we can say, okay, I'm willing to see, I'm willing to sit in the mystery, I'm willing to sit in all the whatever, whatever all is there, and not accept the first answer, not accept the second answer, not, you know, keep going and just going, okay, what is this? What is this? And it's a really beautiful place. And we also were appreciating the honesty and the authenticity of being in a sangha and a small group, and where we all shared in that way. So it's like we were all in our little huts. You know, it was really, yeah. Really lovely.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that in our group too. The being able to share and listen, be there for each other.
Where are you?
Yeah, I couldn't find the place to raise my hand. Sorry. I was just thinking about my work. My life work was helping women have babies, and it really trained me to see a human's just best self, or, you know, to see the true self. I remember one time in particular, a woman who had a history of so much abuse on her, of her children, and this baby was going to be taken from her anyway. But I just remember like that transformation for me, like this is, I love this woman. She's giving birth, you know, like there's nothing else to do but love her. And it made me think that, it seems like it would be helpful to continue to, it's so much easier to see the true self of other people. And it seems like that's a really good practice. It will help us to come to finding our true self, because, you know, it's much easier to see it in all of you than in myself.
That's interesting. It makes me think that to see the true self in another person, you must be in contact with your own true self. It seems that way, but maybe not. It just seems that at least a part of you. I don't know, but that's a wonderful. To me, it sounds very wonderful, the experience of seeing others' true self.
Or I guess what comes to mind is I'm not identifying with myself at that time. It's like I'm not self-conscious, wondering what they're going to think of me or anything like that. It's just, I have that outward receptivity and awareness of other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think about a grandmother, you know, just consoling a child. Yeah, she just has this wisdom, you know, there's that this understands the suffering and understands other and doesn't have that self-concern in that caring process. There's no self that runs interference with the experience. Kind of out of time here, aren't we? There's probably other thought. We probably have some time for a short something. Okay, well, let's go with that. Anyway, thanks for all your sharing. Nice that we've gathered here today. So I'll add, you know, say a few words at the end, as we usually do. As I always like to, we like to do, remind us and all about Donna supporting Sims, supporting the teachers with Donna, and consider that reciprocity of, you know, it's a group supported system here. So I dropped the links into the Sims donate page. You can see that. And with that, I think why don't we just sit, allow this words and stuff to just come to stillness again. Breathing in, breathing out, relaxing. Just letting go. Knowing we're here. And having an intention of bringing mindfulness to our day. And remembering all the suffering that's in the world. The regular stuff and the more difficult people are experiencing. May we all be happy. May all be healthy. We find our needs met in terms of food, shelter, and clothing. May we all navigate life with kindness and caring towards one another. And may we all live in peace. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.